Finishing.com, the homepage of the finishing industry, presents the Metal Finishing Industry Update Podcast.
Hi, this is Kate Miner and Ted Mooney with update number 51 for the week of November 12th, 2007. We begin this week with Ted's interview with Tom Rochester of Plating Systems and Technologies to discuss Tom's discovery about trivalent chromating.
On the line with us today is Tom Rochester, Chairman and Chief Technical Officer of Plating Systems and Technologies, Jackson, Michigan. Plating Systems and Technologies is a well-known supplier of mechanical plating and mechanical galvanizing equipment. In a course of doing certain corrosion testing, Tom made some observations about trivalent chromating that are, without exaggeration, earth-shaking. We'll get back to that in a minute. Hello, Tom.
Good morning, Ted. It's great talking to you, and I'd just like to thank you for the contribution that you and Finishing.com have made to our industry, starting as a bulletin board and now as a website that's really the forum for surface finishing on an international basis. So thanks.
Thank you. And Tom, could you please introduce yourself and your company to our listeners?
Well, I've been in metal finishing a long time, since 1978. That's when I started. I started working for 3M, who was the pioneer in peen plating or mechanical plating. And then after I left 3M, I founded Plating Systems in 1985 in Jackson, Michigan. And since then, we've become a fairly significant force in the area of mechanical plating, chemicals, processes, and now equipment as well.
Yes, you have. I think we all pretty much recognize you by now. As most of our listeners may know, European Union regulations known as RoHS, Reduction of Hazardous Substances, ELV, End of Life Vehicle, and similar standards ultimately resulted in a huge upheaval in the finishing industry and the virtual elimination of hexavalent chromating worldwide. That's a good thing, isn't it, Tom?
That can be a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not a big believer in high-performance trivalent passivates. I think that inexpensive blue trivalents were a significant contribution to our industry since they eliminated the need for reducing hexavalent chromium to trivalent chromium. This is for stuff that would go maybe 24 hours to white rust. But high-performance trivalent passivates are another thing entirely. They're more expensive than hexavalent chromates. Their performance is generally significantly less. They're subject to abrasion. And based on our research, I really believe now that they don't truly eliminate hexavalent chromium.
Okay. You and your co-author, Zachary Kennedy, in the course of testing some finishes, seem to have made that discovery, which you published as a paper in the October issue of Plating and Surface Finishing, titled Unexpected Results from Corrosion Testing of Trivalent Chromates, right?
That's right, Ted.
Please tell us who Zachary is and then summarize what those unexpected results were.
Well, Zach is a college sophomore majoring in chemistry at Cedarville University in Cedarville, Ohio. He's a research professional at PS&T during the summers and on breaks. He's a bright kid and very intelligent. He's also my great nephew. But let me go over the results of our testing. What we did was we took some trivalent passivated parts and treated them with 1,5-diphenyl carbohydrazide, which is a standard colorimetric test for hexavalent chrome. We put a spot of this on the part and put the part in the salt spray cabinet. And within 24 hours, actually even within an hour, we began to see colorimetric indication of the generation of hexavalent chromium from the trivalent chromium. Now, this we describe in the paper as Kennedy's test, because Zach came up with this test. Now, there's a criticism that can be made of this test, and that is that maybe the test solution, which is based on diphenyl carbohydrazide and phosphoric acid, actually triggers in some way the generation of hexavalent chromium from trivalent chromium. So we did another test, and we call that Rochester's test. That's for me.
Okay.
What we did was we collected the condensate coming off of the parts in the salt spray cabinet, and we tested this for hexavalent chromium, again using carbohydrazide, but basically similar to the GMW 3034 test or the ISO 3613 test. And what we found was that hexavalent chromium was coming off of these parts. So those are our two tests. We've done a few other tests that would be interesting that we didn't publish, but these are the two core tests that indicate that hexavalent chromium is generated from trivalent passivates during the corrosion process.
And what prompted you to do this research or this test?
Well, last spring, I was at one of our customer shops, and the QC manager wanted me to look at some salt spray tests of trivalent passivates, and I did. And these parts had subsequently been treated with a leachant sealant, and it just jumped out at me at that time that the corrosion protection, the corrosion product, the corrosion process being exhibited was consistent with inhibitive protection and not really with barrier protection. At that time, I was busy with our business, so I didn't have time to pursue this issue until Zach started working for us over the summer.
Okay, I really can't comment on the accuracy of your results, Tom, but I have called your paper perhaps the most important one of the decade. After all, billions of dollars have been spent on this worldwide conversion to trivalent chromate, and if it doesn't really do what it's reputed to do, even if it fails only in a limited sense or specific circumstances, it really is a stunner.
Really, Ted, you know, what's interesting to me, you know, I've tried to not only report on the experimental results, but give my interpretation, which might differ from somebody else's. My conclusion is that trivalent passivates function by generating hexavalent chromium during the corrosion process. I know that some people, there's very little published work on this, but some people have set forth the position that trivalent passivates are barrier coatings. But these coatings are only 200 to 900 nanometers thick. And frankly, I don't believe that a coating that thick can function as a barrier coating. So the bottom line, in my mind, is that trivalent passivates function by generating hexavalent chromium during the corrosion process. And this acts as a corrosion inhibitor, basically the same as hexavalent passivates or hexavalent chromates.
That obviously is a very interesting result. Did you have any particular motive or agenda for publishing this paper and doing this research?
No, there's really no hidden agenda. Our interest really was purely scientific. But even though our interest was scientific, I think there's a significant advantage to the suppliers and applicators from publishing this paper. I think information is power, for one thing. But another thing is that as of October of this year, as of the publication date of the article in Plating and Surface Finishing, no party can make claims against any other party because of the existence of hexavalent chromium and trivalent passivates as a result of the onset of the corrosion process. But really, we have no way to economically benefit from this research. This was really just a contribution to our industry's technical base of knowledge from Zach and me.
Great. And how can people find out more about this paper or about plating systems and technologies?
Well, I think there are three ways. First of all, if people who are listening to this podcast aren't already subscribers to Plating and Surface Finishing and members of the National Association of Surface Finishers, they really should be.
That's
the second
true.
Thing is they can track this issue, which is obviously going to have a lot of discourse and a lot of discussion on finishing.com, which is really the international homepage of the finishing industry. It's where everybody talks about finishing issues, and this is a very important finishing issue. And for mechanical plating, our website, mechanicalplating.com, is up and running 24 hours a day, and all of our contact information is there. And really, hopefully, finishing.com, you know, as this issue becomes important and becomes discussed, hopefully finishing.com will be the continuing forum for discussing this issue on much more of a real-time basis than the technical journals.
We hope so, Tom, and we certainly will be happy to contribute by providing that forum for the discussion. We'll let you go now. I'm sure you will be busy discussing these results, and thanks so much for sharing them with us.
Well, thanks, Ted. Just one other thing. I'm really surprised so far at the lack of questions or responses to this article. I know it's a hot-button issue, but to be perfectly honest, I'm shocked. I haven't heard from a single automotive company, domestic or foreign, or a single first-tier automotive supplier.
Well,
I'm surprised.
Well, sometimes it takes a little while for you know, a watershed idea like this to get some traction. And hopefully people listening to this podcast will start the discussion going, as you say, in real time. And thanks again so much for sharing it with us, because I think it really is a very important issue.
Thanks, Ted, and thank you for your contributions to the finishing industry.
Okay, bye now, Tom.
Seeking employment in the surface finishing industry? Then please check out our Help Wanteds. Posted on November 6th, LineTech is seeking an anodized manufacturing engineer. This position is responsible for optimizing flow of material through their anodized operation. Key objectives for this position include the continuous improvement of finishing processes, supplier management, development of key metrics, and support for operations management as needed. Requirements for this position include post-high school education with a science foundation in an engineering-related discipline and a minimum of 1 to 3 years of related work experience. For more information on this position, as well as all of the available positions, please visit our Help Wanteds. Here's the calendar of events through the end of November. On November 13th, the Philadelphia branch of the AESF will have a joint meeting with PAMF at Doubletree Guest Suites in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. Guest speaker will be John Welke of J&T Technologies to discuss newer membrane systems. Also on November 13th, the Mid-Tennessee branch of the AESF will have a plant tour of United Record Pressing Company in Nashville, followed by dinner at the Gerst House Restaurant. And finally on November 13th, there will be a joint ASM-AESF Milwaukee branch meeting at the Porterhouse Steakhouse in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. The meeting is sponsored by Heat Bath, and there will be a presentation by Steven Seuss of Stork Technomet on failure analysis of plated and coated metallic components. On November 14th, the Metal Finishing Association of Southern California will have a Cal OSHA update with trainer Bernie Moore of Moore Compliance and Training, and a legislative update with Jeff Hannipal of the Policy Group and Jerry Desmond Jr., the MFASC and STA Legislative Advocate in Sacramento. Also on November 14th, the AESF Seattle Puget Sound branch will have their monthly meeting at Barnaby's Restaurant in Tukwila, Washington. On November 14th through the 16th, Spray Finishing Technology Workshop, presented by Binks and DeVilbiss and sponsored by Owens Community College, will be taking place in Toledo, Ohio. My interview with Dr. Richard Krupa, the coordinator of the event, is available on the calendar page. And on November 15th, the Silicon Valley branch of the AESF will have a NASF legislative update at Spin a Yarn Restaurant in Fremont, California. Speakers will be Jeff Hannipal of the Policy Group and Jerry Desmond Jr., the MFASC STA Legislative Advocate in Sacramento. For more information on these events, please click on the calendar on our homepage. Well, that wraps up the podcast for this week. For Ted and myself, thanks for listening.